politica culturali, miei Carsten Schwede. Meħba, nil-aħkom l-ura, l-program jħor fil-sensiela il-politika kulturali, għal-min jilu jsegwina sa matuda l-ħar xur, jgħaf li jgħetna orbu fit-tmiem it-tieni sensiela, fil-fattillum id-disa program u mil-ġdid, għal-konna tema pjuttost interessanti li dejjem tipprova tiftaħ tieqa oħra fuq id-dimensjoni tal-politika kulturali, mhux biss l-arti, l-kultura, l-edukazzjoni u l-politika fija nifisha, imma dejjem nipprova u naraw għaliex ta' min wieħed jixtara, ta' min wieħed jiddiskutija. U għalhekk kif tafu minn ġimgħa ġimgħa ikolli miegħi xi mistieden, xi mistiedna biex magħhom inkun nista' nara daqsxejn politika kulturali għalfejn ta' min wieħed jiddiskutija. U llum il-programm ħajkun bl-Ingliż kif ġieli għamilna għaliex miegħi għandi l-Mina Tolu. Mina, I welcome you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me here.
Thank you very much for accepting the invitation. Mina, I guess some people amongst our listeners may already be familiar with you either through the university context. We ourselves met through a course in culture and conflict resolution run by the Center for Conflict Resolution within the University of Malta, in very particular circumstance because it was the very first week when learning switched
online,
yeah, back in April, I think, of 2020.
Yeah.
And then, in fact, it took us a few months, I think, until the summer to be actually met in person over a really nice, good vegan lunch.
Exactly.
I remember. I think my daughter was
yes,
with me as well.
Yes, she was.
So, Mina, coming back to you, as I always do with my guests, so it's the beginning of, before the program, so it's always, okay, two words, three words of how to introduce the person. And I think we settled on trans activist, working with the Young Greens on a European level.
On a European level, that's right.
And that's been going on for quite a while. In fact, I'd like to speak with you a bit more about that sort of Greens policy and cultural policy. And also, you also mentioned to me acting as a communications consultant on LGBTI issues. As a first question, and I guess maybe it's the ease of it which makes it interesting, but also challenging, because there's so much to say within such a short span of time. When I sort of studied and was introduced in the field of, it sounds like some initiation, but it's true, the world of cultural policy, although not central by any means, has grown in importance in issues related to cultural studies, for example, or with issues of culture wars, which come and go, depending on the period of time we're experiencing. This is one current one. Sort of starts off from culture, from the arts, from issues like cultural relations, and then start sort of leaning towards maybe anthropological issues, social issues, trying to combine as many elements as possible, but still trying to be coherent within itself. Trying to sort of not only reach out, so somehow changing the perspective, even my own perspective, mm-hmm. of going from traditional cultural policy and then reaching out to, say, LGBTI policy and issues, but actually turning things around and saying, if cultural policy is relevant, is to be relevant, then it's not a matter of saying, we should have within, say, a course of studies, say, at university, a lecture or two on LGBTI issues. But actually, if we want to be talking about society today and have cultural policy relevant, then maybe there's a bit of a bigger rethink that one should do, that there are certain core issues within our society that somehow should be informing policy bottom up, from within, from the core.
Yeah, as always, a difficult question to start. But I think that in the case of how LGBTI issues can inform cultural policy, but also cultural studies, and as you were saying, how it touches upon other areas like anthropology, be it sociology. To me, I really come back to queer studies as, and just which can be very complex, but one core kind of central theme of queer studies is to deconstruct narratives, to deconstruct social constructs. And so in this case, when it comes to LGBTI issues, like to deconstruct what we mean when we talk about sexuality, when we talk about sex, when we talk about gender, when we talk about our bodies, and to look beyond the norms that perhaps are overrepresented in our cultural spaces as well. So I think that this is where LGBTI studies, but in particular queer studies, can start to inform also cultural thinking. And so this very central is obviously theories of social constructivism and also that deconstruction of gender, which I deal with a lot in my work, and the deconstruction of norms about what expectations we might have of a male body or a female body or heterosexuality, or, you know, these kind of challenge the day-to-day assumptions in our lives and make these more visible. And I think from the margins, so to say, of academia, which is where queer studies has really sat for a while, we start to see, and from the margins of our queer communities and our LGBT communities, we start to see some of our own language and our own approaches to sex and relationships and friendships and community building reach more mainstream ways of life. And I mean, to go to a very personal example, I use the pronouns they and them. As we discussed, they're gender-neutral pronouns. They're meant to also challenge one's idea of, can you actually tell the gender of a person when you can look at them from their expression? And often you can, but sometimes you can't, and you cannot necessarily make assumptions based on a person's appearance. And similarly, this kind of pushing beyond this border can go also into not making assumptions about a person's appearance and making assumptions about their nationality or their class background or their political affiliations, which I think in Malta, which is a very binary society, also built on those political binaries and linguistic binaries, then we are so quick to assume and to consider and to create an identity for a person that we've only ever seen but never actually met. And I think that queer studies and queer communities allow us to start to deconstruct those binaries and really look at the nuances and the beauty, actually, in these nuances.
I find that one of the main challenges of trying to go beyond the binary association, as you said, even politically, it's very much us and them. To sort of go back to a popular or almost mythical expression in the Maltese political imaginary. It's sort of, if you're not with us, you're against us. Yeah. So it's very much almost in a sports-like, competitive way. You sort of wear the mask or you don't within a pandemic. But what does that mean?
Yeah.
Politically, socially, culturally. And I guess we are, as a society, not only in Malta, by any means, geared in a way of sort of saying it's one or it's zero. So we have developed, after all, binary in computers. It wasn't the other way around.
Exactly.
So I find that one of the main challenges, even of cultural policy, of any kind of social policy, really, but obviously we're focusing on this, is to somehow address the multiplicity, the diversity of our own identities within us and with each other. Identities also, at least from my understanding, picking on from people like Stuart Hall, for example, within cultural studies, that our identities change with time and we can be different people at different moments in time, even with different people within family context, within work. But somehow all this within structures, political structures, work structures, economic structures, would still take us back to very much us and them, in or out, male or female, so on and so forth.
Red or blue.
Yes. So I see it even, for example, with young people. Going back, for example, to my daughter, who's now 10, her school, her education, there's a lot which is discussed and is practiced, which is light years away from 30 years ago, when I was at school in the 80s in Malta. But I realize there are many structures which still go back to a long time ago. Because sort of the content is one thing, but the container is still very much what it used to be. Or maybe I'm saying that because I'm 42 and I still sort of see things that way.
I think I also still see, I think some threads in society, some of these normative threads, will go back a long time and are rooted there, and kind of everything draws from them. And it's a challenge to break through them because it's, well, to take from physics, you know, if you're moving in one direction at one speed, it's, you're going to keep going. And to break that requires a lot of energy. And you made me think of something, which is, and I think this factor of education and this important role it plays, of course, and as you reflected on structures and culture, and I had a training once on organizational development, and the trainer was like, culture eats structure for breakfast, meaning like, yes, you might have all these structures and you might attempt to change the structures, and because you can physically change those structures, you can physically change the policies, you can try to improve them, but if the culture has not changed with that structure, even if you have changed the building, the culture is going to take over. And so if our culture is still very much rooted in, I would say, a patriarchal in many ways, it's sexist in many ways, it is very rigid in terms of notions of relationships. I won't even go into like gender binaries or the difference between genders, that as much as we try to change the structure, the culture is going to take a bit longer to actually shift. And be it changing structure through cultural policy or through social policies that have been introduced in the past 5 years in particular, that cultural shift has to really come from conversation and dialogue. And I think that's sometimes what we miss here, and what you were talking about, the us and them. It's so hard to have that dialogue.
tisimaw il-program Il-Politika Kulturali miegħi Karsten Xwir. Paused a while, I think it helped me as well to catch up on some of the thoughts that I'm discussing with you. Today I'm speaking with Mina Tolu on, I guess, supposedly, nominally, what I will write, I guess, in my notes after LGBTI policy meets cultural policy. But actually, you're making me reflect on sort of how this is an entry point and to many, many other levels of society as well, touching upon communication, representation, education, and somehow this issue of the binary element, which is a simple, sometimes a practical way of going about things. Will I do this or that? Is it a yes?
Well, it's very easy.
Or is it a no? At the end of it. But since we're in the second part of the program, Mina, I also wanted to ask you about the wider context. I know you're active on a European level, on an international level. What we've been reflecting upon on the Maltese context, including the changes you've mentioned briefly in the past 5-6 years with certain socially progressive movements taking place and taking a bit of root as well, from what I can see. Is that echoing what's happening on a wider European level? Differences, I'm sure there are, because we speak of Europe sometimes and everyone has their own idea of what Europe is.
There are definitely many differences on a European level when it comes to LGBTI policies themselves. Malta does have currently, in terms of LGBTI policy, the most progressive in Europe in terms of protecting trans individuals, allowing us to change our gender on our documents with ease, with no bureaucracy, whereas other countries make it really difficult, with protecting intersex infants from unnecessary non-consensual surgeries, and also recognizing same-sex relationships, same-gender relationships. I think Malta is currently leading the way in this area of policy. Something that we see in Malta and elsewhere is anyways a considerable backlash, which has been termed as a kind of anti-gender backlash, where gender is used as a word to mean that this concept of gender is a new ideology that is kind of where it's coming from. Generally would be this idea that it's coming from the West. And so you see this kind of conversations, particularly in Eastern Europe, on perhaps a kind of non-recognition that trans and gender non-conforming identities have actually existed for years. And so to bring it back to kind of stories that we tell, I think this shows the importance of also researching and funding research on our own histories as an LGBT community to show, in fact, that it is not a new thing, it is not a foreign thing, that LGBT people have been in various forms, or trans and gender non-conforming people have been in various forms across Europe for centuries, and that this is not a new thing. But very much this backlash does harm, and it would be ridiculous to think that it's only limited to countries that people might think are a bit more conservative. Because also in the UK, backlash against trans identities and trans self-determination is huge. and leading figures and leading cultural figures, authors and TV presenters and actors are actually sharing their opinions on whether they believe trans people are real or not, or whether trans people are valid and should be recognized by their governments. And this creates actually a lot of these conversations happen online. It's a form of culture war in itself.
Yes,
you mentioned
yes.
culture wars.
It's a tension which is very, one can feel it very
yes.
strongly. Mina, in the last episode with Angèle Gallia, we discussed, we really just touched upon the importance of trying to, as you said, dialogue, converse, be open also to changing one's positions. If one has a position, admitting maybe one does not, and one just focuses on whatever is at hand, so to speak. And you also made reference to the J.K. Rowling episode in
yeah.
2020. Let's say that. And remember Angèle saying, so we didn't have time to go into it, and we weren't pretending to be experts on the matter in particular. But she said it's so important to try to walk in other people's shoes, and arts and culture are one way of doing that, through theater, through drama, through writing. But you pointed out something which is very sobering to me, coming from the field of cultural policy studies, which is it's not always the case. Sometimes the arts, culture, and everything else with them fossilize and solidify and make conceptions or preconceptions or particular points of view even stronger. We have many examples.
Yes.
History abounds in examples of arts and culture actually supporting the strong to maintain their powerful position.
Yeah. I think that this brings me back to some research that was done in the Netherlands. They analyzed TV shows from, I've got it written down, they analyzed TV shows from 1991 to 2016 to see what are the dominant stereotypes or tropes about trans people in Dutch television. And they found six dominant tropes, that trans people are portrayed as frauds, that trans people are portrayed as victims, that trans people are portrayed as being part of an underworld, being part of a criminal world, but also that trans people can be successful coming out stories, or that they are pioneers, but also that they might be pawns, that they're used to, for the benefit of other characters in the story, that somehow they have a superpower that can be used for the benefit of cis characters in a story. And these six stereotypes and tropes that this Dutch research team, Atria, found, I think are prevalent in all other television that displays trans people. And working now in the TV industry myself, I have seen these very stereotypes come through some of the scripts I'm consulting on. And the challenge there is to push for nuance and more interesting stories. Also because directors don't want to put something out there that has already been done and is a cliche now. And I think it's a challenge for them, however, to see how they can do that. And unless you have trans people in the room, be they as scriptwriters, actors, directors themselves, it would be very hard to start to change those trends and tropes.
How does the audience come into this? So I imagine even on the projects you are working on, as a theatre would, you sort of have feelers to see what's going on out there. Is there anything of that which is already coming back into research or your own work, maybe?
I think the reason why I got this job in the first place is because the trans audience worldwide is being more vocal about what we want to see and what we don't want to see. We don't want to see more trans people murdered on television. We know trans people get murdered every day. We know people in our communities are being victimized. We don't need to see those stories every day in order for you to show us a realistic story about trans people. There is so much diversity in our stories. And this visibility and vocalization of what we want to see in the media, of how we want to see ourselves portrayed, but also the importance of actors like Laverne Cox on Orange is the New Black, and of TV shows like Pose, have, you know, just created that tipping point that now even in Europe we can start to see more positive trans portrayal on our screens.
In a way, does this sort of follow what's happened already with other communities?
Yes.
Be they minority because of ethnicity, race, religion, so on and so forth.
I think so. And I think what's interesting to me is also the Me Too movement, for example, has had an important role to play here as well in how do we, what is the female gaze? How do you also cater the screen not just to a male gaze? And in my case, I think, what is the trans gaze? How is a trans audience going to take this in? And how can we anyways tell sometimes some difficult stories, but in a way that does not cater to the male gaze, a cis male gaze or a cis female gaze, but caters to a trans gaze?
And in a way, there's always this container, which we mentioned before, which sort of limits, but also gives us a platform. And this program being a case in point, we're at the end of the program, and maybe we just scratch the surface of a number of issues. But as you said, I guess it is part of a long-term process of trying to engage in a long-term dialogue. So, Mina, I thank you very much for having shared these thoughts today. And I also wish you all the best with your current and future
project. Thank you for having me on your show.
Nirringrazzjakom tal-li smajtuna fil-programm tal-lum. Nfakkarkom ukoll illi tkunu tistgħu taċċedu iktar informazzjoni anke dwar il-kelliema stess fuq il-siti online, media soċjali, ecc. U nirringrazzjakom ukoll tal-respons li dejjem tatuna, speċjalment hawnhekk fil-istazzjon Campus FM, dwar dan il-programm u ideat ukoll għal xi stage diskuss anke f'programm jara.
تيري وردة جيجيب أمو سرهي قد وردي أغديبين